call this meeting of the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy to order. We have a quorum present. And as a reminder to the public, the only public testimony we'll be taking on the bills today are from individuals who signed up in advance for the agenda posting on the committee webpage. Our first order of business is approval of the March 22nd, 2023 minutes. Chair Beckerfin, would you like to move the minutes?
I will move the minutes from 14 hours ago.
All right, all those in favor of the March 22 amendments signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? I think I said amendments. The minutes, March 22nd minutes. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 22nd, 2023 are approved. The first bill we have on our agenda is House File 1233. It's a Representative Pinto bill. And we're bringing this back to our committee to amend it and take a vote. We already took public testimony on this bill and had full member discussion. Representative Pinto, would you like to move your bill to be recommended to be placed on the general register?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right, and then we've got a, boy, we're all tired, so I got to pay attention to what we're doing here with the amendment. So on March 2nd, we adopted the A5 author's amendment. What we need to do today is reconsider the A5, and then Representative Pinto will withdraw that, and then we'll move to adopt the A7 amendment. So first, I will move to reconsider the A5 amendment that was adopted on March 2nd. All those in favor of the motion to reconsider signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. All right. Representative Pinto, would you like to withdraw the A5 amendment?
I would, Madam Chair, and my apologies for the parliamentary complexity here, and I'll be happy to explain it at the appropriate time.
All right. You might owe me coffee later. And then would you like to now move the A7 amendment and explain that?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and the A7 amendment replaces the A5 amendment that we had adopted 9 days ago, I guess. There were some, this is in response to some additional input from stakeholders and addressing a number of issues. And I'm pleased to say that there's some pretty strong support for the bill with the A7 amendment, and for that reason would ask members to adopt it.
So any discussion to the A7 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the A7 amendment is adopted. All right. All right. Is there anything you would like to say about the bill or the amendment, Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to remind members that the House File 1233, as amended, and the A7 amendment really has the same substantive effect as the A5, but just but has some cleanup items. And what it does is that it prohibits, I have to remind you, prohibits the use of isolation as discipline for young people held in correctional facilities and detention facilities. It still allows the use of isolation for safety purposes, and sometimes that is necessary. We want to make sure that there are regulations on that, as there are, but we want to prohibit the practice of it being used for disciplinary purposes. We know that that has a really negative impact on young people. And then the bill also prohibits the use of strip searching, or certainly restricts it significantly to the situations described on the bottom of page one of the A7, and has some pretty robust reporting that I think we all can be pleased about that's listed on page two, the bottom half of that page. And so I'm happy to have any discussion and would ask for support.
Is there any further discussion to this bill, especially as amended? Lead Navani.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Representative Pinto, the Teamsters Correctional Union and the Juvenile Detention Association, both I know have been in conversations with you, and they testified here about wanting to be part of the rulemaking process. Could you just describe what you're doing with that?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Lee Devani. I should have mentioned that before. Yeah, I've appreciated the dialogue both with them and then also with you. The rulemaking listed on page three will, my understanding through the Department of Corrections, will absolutely include a number of stakeholder groups, and certainly that includes the folks who are operating and working in these juvenile detention facilities. I think that's required under rulemaking anyway, and then DOC has been very clear, and I know in direct conversations with those groups that they'll be involved, as I should note, with other folks as well. So yeah, that'll definitely be part of the process. And thanks for the question.
Oh, Lisa Bonney.
Thank you, Chair Mueller.
Vice Chair Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question about timeline for the rulemaking. I was wondering if the commissioner might be able to just share with us just a more concrete sense of what the timeline will be for this.
All right. Commissioner Schnell, welcome back. You can introduce yourself and answer that question, please.
Madam Chair, Paul Schnell from the Department of Corrections, Representative Feist, to your question. This is expedited rulemaking. It will take still take time. We're thinking of approximately 18, maximum of 24 months. We will initiate the process that's said immediately when this passes and begin pull stakeholders together that to begin the work on that.
Vice Chair Feist. Thank you so much for that clarity. I do think that time is of the essence, that this is really important, so thank you. All right, closing remarks, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just to make sure we're all set, you know, the language of the bill will kick in January 1, 2024. There's a little bit of necessity for lead time. I think the corrections will be offering some, providing some interim guidance to facilities in the meantime. And then January 1 of 24, even though it's going to take those 18 months for the rules, the prohibitions in the bill will take effect. They won't need to wait for the expedited rules to take effect. And so I'm happy that we're going to be moving on this and certainly would urge members' support. Thank you.
Representative Pinto renews his motion that House File 1233, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Yep. Thank you, Vice Chair Feist. You are up next. And we are moving on to House File 2251. I will move to lay over House File 2251. And there are no amendments filed on the bill. So when you get up to the table, if you want to tell us about your bill, please.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee. Hello. House File 2251 provides additional $150,000 annual grant to an organization that provides legal representation for children in need of protection or services and children in out-of-home placement. These legal services are provided by the nonprofit Children's Law Center. The Children's Law Center provides pro bono legal representation to children 10 and over who find themselves in child protection system and an out-of-home placement. Our statutes guarantee that these children are entitled to have their expressed wishes presented in court, including parental rights determinations, adoption cases, and ensuring that their rights are maintained, such as ensuring that they are not transferred out of their school, giving them voice and keeping siblings together, and many other life-altering decisions made by our court system. The Children's Law Center utilizes a small staff and hundreds of volunteer attorneys who step up to support children, representing them all the way through either reunification with their parents, adoption, or until they age out of the foster care system. And I would just like to say one of my good friends in my book club has been volunteering as a pro bono attorney with the Children's Law Center for many years, as long as I've known her, and it's just a wonderful organization. And so I will turn it over to my testifier for more information.
I appreciate it.
All right,
Madam.
Yes, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Lilia Pantaleeva, I am the Executive Director of Children's Law Center of Minnesota. Our organization has been around for about 30 years, and what we do is this legal representation. We are highly experienced in this work, and the benefit that we have is that we have about 340 volunteer attorneys who are doing this free to the kids, free to the state. But the organization itself is a very small budget organization, and as we all know, legal services are not necessarily free. We're asking for an increase, something that we've been needing for a few years now. It's not a big increase, but we need this money to sustain our capacity in order for us to recruit, train, and supervise all of our volunteer attorneys. About 30% of our cases, maybe less, are handled internally because some of these cases that are coming in are too egregious, and we don't assign them to volunteers, so we need that capacity of our staff attorneys to handle those cases. Youth who's on the run, youth who maybe are reunifying any day now, so we don't assign those to volunteer attorneys. Continuity is what we provide to these children and youth. We take on a case, and we will represent the child and youth through the absolute closure of the case, meaning meaning adoption, or maybe they age out of the system, making sure that they have a stable adult in their lives, and that all of their obstacles and challenges are removed so that they can be successful in our community. We provide legal representation to CHIPS and state wards, and our legal representation can last up to 11 years. So I'm really asking for this support. We've been coming back asking for this increase for quite a few years now, but it's almost urgent that we get this year. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony, for being here today. We did not have any members of the public sign up to testify, so we can move on to member discussion. Lee Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Representative Feist, or the testifier, can you tell me what is the difference between this and the guardian ad litem programs? And is this done separately or in concurrence with? How does that work?
Yes, Director Pantaleva.
Madam Chair, Representative, there is a difference statutorily. Every child in child protection is entitled to a guardian ad litem at any age, and every child 10 and older is entitled to an attorney. Statutorily, guardian ad litems cannot be attorneys for the children, and the biggest difference is the attorneys represent child's expressed wishes, so be their voice in the courtroom and address their position. Guardian ad litems look out for the child's best interest. So different standard. Both are required by law.
Lead the button.
Thank you, Chair.
Anything further? Closing remarks, Vice Chair Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you heard, this is a really wonderful, important organization for children in our states, and I would urge your support.
And with that, I will renew my motion and lay over House File 2251. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right, members, the last bill on the agenda is House File 2890. This is the governor's budget bill. This will be an informational hearing only. For members of the public, we'll be taking full testimony on House File 2890 when we take up the bill next week. This will be the vehicle bill for our public safety omnibus bill. So please keep an eye out on the agenda posting with instructions on how to sign up to testify. And because this is an informational hearing, there'll be no official action taken today on this bill. And throughout the session, we've heard budget presentations from the Board of Private Detectives, the Department of Public Safety, the Post Board, Department of Corrections, Ombudsperson for Corrections, and the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. So we're not going to do a complete walkthrough of the bill. And rather, we have the DOC here with us today to share with us the governor's revised budget recommendations that were not released when they presented our budget to us. I don't even know how many weeks, days, whenever that was. And if we have additional time, which I think we will, we can ask questions about both the DOC and DPS budget proposals if anybody has questions. So welcome back again, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself one more time. And go ahead and tell us about your revised budget recommendations.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Paul Schnell, the Minnesota Department of Corrections. Thank you for allowing me a few minutes just to explain the governor's revised budget recommendation for the agency. Members, there's a fact sheet in your materials that outlines the underlying reasons for cost pressures that have created a budget deficiency at the Department of Corrections in the current fiscal year. As the third largest agency in state government, the DOC has ever-shifting costs and is heavily impacted by inflationary pressures, particularly as it relates to food and utilities expenditures. Our budget is also heavily staffing-focused, and workforce stabilization challenges have put unforeseen pressures on our budget, as well faster than expected growth in the incarcerated population. For context, in fiscal year 2022, the DOC had its budget slightly reduced overall, and in 2023, the appropriation went up just slightly. This was in large part due to the decline of our prison population during COVID and the court backlog. However, the rapid increase in population, as well as the increase in inflationary costs, and the staffing crisis we face have left us with a $12.6 million deficiency in the current biennium. Subsequently, the governor's revised budget recommendation includes that $12.6 million request, which would be for this biennium. Another addition to the governor's recommendation for funding is funding for in-house virtual court hearing coordination. Key partners in this court have included the courts, And we are making virtual court hearings a permanent practice. Managing virtual court hearings in our 11 prison facilities has been a significant undertaking. Effectively, we are creating courtrooms serving all 87 counties at our correctional facilities across the state. Currently, virtual court hearings are largely coordinated and scheduled by a record staff and case managers across the facilities. We rely on the limited time of already overburdened case managers and officers to ensure hearings operate as intended by the courts. Case managers are spending considerable time facilitating Zoom court hearings and monitoring those hearings, which takes them away from their regular coursework. Correction officers are needed to ensure the safety and security and are not always the appropriate staff to answer questions for individuals during that process. The requested funding of $500,000 per year ongoing will help the department invest in needed technology and additional staff to ensure that we can accommodate the demands of court hearings in this virtual environment. And finally, members, you also heard a standalone bill last week, House File 2388, to create a clemency review commission in support of the work of the Minnesota Board of Pardons. The proposal is also part of the governor's revised budget recommendation, which includes a cost of $986,000 per year to fund and staff and process the work of the commission. It also helps support victim services and all of the work related to outreach and education on clemency. With that, Madam Chair, I would stand for any questions you or the committee may have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions for the Commissioner? Lee Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Commissioner Snell, I see you've got a handout that on the one pager that came out. You're talking about the increased cost of utilities rising 18% last year. Have you looked into what the state correctional system is going to have to do to comply with the 2040 carbon free bill?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Novotny, I have not looked at that specifically. We are making a number of improvements and accessing some funds that are available from the state enterprise to address the requirements as it relates to the efficiency side of that in our facilities. But we know that that's a significant lift and has been just given the condition of our facility and the age of many of them.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Whitty.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Thank you, Commissioner Snell. I see on the handout you have a workforce stabilization and overtime. Recently in the news, there's been some assaults on your correction officers. How is the workforce right now? Are you below? Are you able to find more?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Woody, this is a challenge, as you know, in the public safety sector generally. It has been a challenge. We have done incentives to bring people in, that we have brought a high number of people through the door. We've hired a historic number of people, but our retention rates, based on the work itself and some of the folks who are coming in that may have had an interest, but then when they learn the nature and the challenges of the work, it's difficult to maintain them. So we're right now about 110 officers short from complement, budgeted complement. Add to that then the number of people that you may have on long-term leave, that's military leaves, FMLA, those sorts of things. That's where some of the pressures really become. And that number can double then, about 10% of below our authorized or funded strength.
Representative Whitty.
Thank you. Any thoughts on pay raises? I don't know if that's in the budget or not. Obviously, the men and women do great work, and it's not an easy job. But obviously, they're put under a lot of stress there, too. And so I was just curious if that was part of the budget. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Woody, yes, there are, you know, we have, as part of this, really been thinking about the ways that we want to bring up wages. We are mindful of the collective bargaining process, and that will certainly be happening. But I think, you know, as an enterprise, the department certainly knows, MMB, who does a lot of that negotiation, is aware of the challenges we're facing, as well as other public safety sectors. And so that will certainly be a part of this, and we've been planful around that.
Thank you.
Representative Woody. Representative Hewitt.
Real quick, Madam Chair, and to the Commissioner, I'm going to go back to the same thing, line that Representative Woody was on, but I'm kind of more curious. The qualifications of an officer, and then once you retain an officer, are you opening the doors of education so they have that retention period that they can actually learn more about their profession in an academic way? I mean, what are we doing to retain them, as well as what are the qualifications of the starting point here?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Hewitt, I think you know, it is a great question. That we can have people literally come in at 18, 19 years old, a high school graduate, and start in this work. And you know, that demands a lot, just given the nature of the work itself. We have been, and one of the things you'll see in our budget is, you know, a significant investment in training, because we really want to develop these folks, just given the nature of the work itself, number one. And number two, we have there's a pilot of a college fund to help lift up and provide a formal education, which can help folks advance in their career, do different, have different work opportunities, case management, whatever that may, what their interest may be as they go forward. We've even been looking at things in your area where, you know, nursing has been a challenge, and we have some officers who would be willing to participate in like paramedic training and use paramedics in the facilities to help aid with some of our basic health services work under our medical director. So we want to be as creative as possible, provide opportunities for our staff to grow and develop, and that is a part of our budget plan.
One follow-up, Madam Chair. And where are you finding the most success in your recruiting? Is it in the high schools, or is it in, and it sounds like, I don't mean to go down that road, but there's a certain person that it's attracted to this, like Representative Navani and Representative Woody over there. There's a certain clientele that want to do these jobs. Are we recruiting out of the high schools? I mean, because if we're going to recruit military people, yep, they're all going to be gone when we call them up, right? So where are great people to have, but it also gives another problem, right?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Hewitt, I think today we are looking to use a fishing, you know, we want to fish in the broadest ponds possible. And really one of the areas that we are really trying to dive into more deeply is trying to attract and retain women and people of color. When we look at our population, we want our workforce to be responsive to and reflective of the people that we're serving. And so the more we can try and attract, people from communities of color, we think that that's going to be in the best interest of those we serve. And frankly, you know, these are very, these are good long-term jobs with you know, good benefits that go on, and even some pension opportunities. And that is something that we think is an important part of, you know, growing generational wealth. And we've seen that in other public safety areas. And so it's one of the areas that we've been really heavily focused on. We've had some success. We have a lot more work to do. But that is, recruitment is also a piece of the governor's budget rec.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anyone else? Oh, Representative Russell.
Changed my mind. We'll have to work on our signals. I was feeding myself at that time, so sorry. I can still do that.
We can't let you go to an auction, apparently. You'll be bidding on everything. Go ahead.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I guess looking over some of this stuff, my question, I guess, would be, why is the governor including the controversial gun bills in his budget recommendations?
Well, I don't know if that's for Commissioner Schnell or...
Would I ask you?
Commissioner, I don't know, for public safety, if we want anybody from public safety to work their way down here. As they're doing that, are there any more questions specific to Commissioner Schnell? Oh, yeah. Jordan, I'm going to butcher your last name. Do you want to come on down and please introduce yourself and answer that question?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Mueller. Representative, there are firearm safety provisions included in the governor's budget. The commissioner, Commissioner Jacobson, sorry, couldn't be here today. He's over in the other body with some other bills. We're happy to answer any questions on those, and we can certainly have a discussion with you on them. But it is the goal of making Minnesota safer in every community and using all the tools we have available.
And can you please introduce yourself?
There you go. So I apologize, Chair. My name is Jordan Holtofkerheide, Legislative Director for the Department of Public Safety.
Anything further for, we've got some other public safety folks here too. Any other questions from the committee? All right, thanks to all of you for being here today. We appreciate it. And members, that concludes today's agenda. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.